Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Face Connecticut, an in-depth look at today's issues.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Face Connecticut on WTIC News Talk 1080, 96.5 TICFM and Light 100.5 WRCH. Aaron Kupek with you this Sunday morning, and we are pleased to be joined by the CEO of Foodshare, Jason Jakubowski. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, Aaron. How are you?
I am well, and yourself?
Doing great. It's a busy time of year for us, but we're gearing up. We're ready to roll.
You are indeed gearing up for the holidays. Foodshare serves Hartford and Tolland counties, fighting hunger and food insecurity. And what are folks at Foodshare doing this time of year?
This time of year, we're immersed in a lot of different things, but we're pretty much immersed in turkeys. Everything has something to do with turkeys throughout the entire month of October, November, leading up to Thanksgiving. We're trying to raise turkeys. We don't have a definitive number yet. We'll have a definitive number on November 7th in terms of how many we need, but we are already expecting that we're going to need about 15,500 turkeys to fulfill families' needs this Thanksgiving.
Looking back to last year, how many meals did you provide over the holidays?
Over the holidays, we did probably 2.5 million meals over the holidays. We do 11.5 over the course of the entire year. The meal distribution really, and people, you know, sometimes I think they're surprised by this, the meal distribution is relatively steady throughout the year. There's not necessarily a spike around the holidays. We definitely do turkeys at Thanksgiving, and that's something that's different. I mean, that is something that's different. But otherwise, there's the need is constant. The donations that we get certainly spike around November, December, around the holidays, but the need is constant throughout the year.
Is there sort of a drought season where people might be thinking about other things and not donating food?
Yeah, summer is tough. Summer is really, really difficult for us. Again, this time of year is great because everybody's thinking about hunger. Everybody's thinking about giving. Everybody's thinking about the holidays. We get about 75% of our revenue in the months of November and December. That's not an easy way to run a business. So by the time we get to June, July, August, when a lot of people are on vacation and not necessarily thinking about giving, or thinking about food insecurity, it's difficult. It definitely gets difficult. So we need to be able to bank our not just our dollars, but our goodwill at this time of the year to be able to expend them during those summer months when things can be a little more difficult.
You can, as you say, bank your dollars, but do you have the capacity to store all that food for use throughout the year?
No, the food income needs to be steady throughout the year, and we're very thankful that it is. About 75% of our food comes from the food industry here in Connecticut, from the grocery industry. And that is pretty constant throughout the year. If they were just giving us food in November and December, we'd have a huge problem because we don't have the room to be able to store all of that and then met it out during the year. So the food donations tend to be relatively constant. Plus, the other 25% is typically stuff that we're able to purchase. So, you know, we do have some control over when we utilize or when we utilize those monies in order to purchase additional produce and other such material. But the food receding food is generally year round.
If someone is thinking about donating to Foodshare and they're considering, well, should I write a check or go to the store and buy some canned meals? Yeah. What would you recommend and why?
That's always a great question. The definitive answer is absolutely writing a check. And I could tell you, what I always say to people is, if you want to do a can drive or if you want to do a food drive, you're better off doing that and giving it to one of your local food pantries, all of whom are partners of Foodshare, because we're just going to take the food, we're going to sort it, we're going to give it to the food pantry anyway. If you're looking to do a monetary donation or to raise money, you're much better off giving it to Food Share because we can purchase so much more with those dollars than a local food pantry can because we buy in such larger quantities. And again, all that food is going to end up either on our mobile trucks or back to one of the local food pantries anyway. But we understand that people have we definitely understand that people have their own preferences. And, you know, for example, this month we're doing through Thanksgiving, we're doing the Turkey and 30 drive. That's kind of combines both. We ask people to donate a turkey so that people can have a good Thanksgiving or a Thanksgiving meal that they might otherwise not have. But the $30 goes to help us secure our mission throughout the entire year. So they're both, they're both important parts of what we do.
You say you get a lot of your food from grocery stores.
Yep.
How does that work? Is that food that has expired or is near expiration?
Yeah, it could be expired, near expiration. The box could be damaged and the inside product could be fine. The can could be dented but still meets certain standards to be able to distribute. It's also possible that there could be mistakes in making things. Pepperidge Farms is one of our largest distributors, and they have a bakery right near us over in Bloomfield. And once every couple of weeks, they'll come and bring pallets and pallets of bread. And it's usually something along the lines of if something wasn't sliced correctly or if there's not the right ratio of raisins in the raisin bread, if there's an imperfection in the product that causes the corporation not to be able to sell it, rather than throw it out, and we're very thankful for this, rather than throw it out, they donate it to us over at FoodShare.
In terms of food insecurity in Greater Hartford, yeah. What are you seeing in terms of the numbers? Is it holding steady, going up, going down?
It's holding steady, and again, one of the best numbers that we have. The numbers themselves, last year the Feeding America number for Hartford and Talon County was about 121,000 people who were food insecure. We're currently at about 118,000. That's not a statistically a significant difference. I mean, it can go up, down 3,000 very easily. We look at the number of turkeys that are requested by our partner agencies and by individual families every year. Last year we needed about 300 more turkeys than we needed the year before. Our current estimate on this Thanksgiving is going to be either plus or minus 200 on where we were last year. So we're kind of hovering around the same spot. The interesting thing is that it's not necessarily the same people who are food insecure. As people recover from food insecurity, other people become food insecure. So it is an unfortunate cycle that as some leave the statistic, some enter into the statistic. The interesting thing about food insecurity is that you never know who it's going to affect. You never know who it's going to hit. The perfect example, the TSA agents up at Bradley Airport. They didn't expect to not be getting a paycheck as a result of the government shutdown earlier this year, but they needed some assistance for a few weeks, and so we distributed probably about 7,000 pounds of food. That was only a temporary thing for them because then when they were able to get their check and get back on their feet, they left that number, but other people were added to it. So we kind of hover around the same amount, about 120,000 people here in Hartford, Talon County.
In fact, you sent a mobile food pantry.
We did. It was some of the. One day, I remember we went up there. It was the rainiest it has ever been in my life. The next week, it was the coldest it's ever been. I mean, think about it. It was January in New England, but the number of people who were in line was amazing. And what was even better was the fact that when it was over and when they started getting their paychecks again, a couple weeks later, a few of them had gone out and had purchased some food and put together some donated food and brought it over to Food Share and just said, hey, look, we just want to be able to thank you guys for what you did for us. So that's something we hope we don't have to do again. But that's why we're here. I mean, that's exactly what our purpose is to help out people who are in need unexpectedly like that.
Where else do you send your mobile food pantries?
We have about 70 different mobile food share sites that crisscross all over Hartford and Talon County. We have a number in Hartford, a number in New Britain. Those are our two largest municipalities. But we also have plenty of mobile sites in Avon, Simsbury, Farmington, West Hartford. Hunger doesn't care what your zip code is. Hunger doesn't care where you live. And I'm always amazed when, especially when you talk to sometimes you'll talk to elected officials or sometimes you'll talk to other individuals out in the community who will say, oh, well, that's nice. You give all your food to Hartford and to New Britain and to Bristol. Yeah, we do give a lot of food to those places, but there's a tremendous amount of hunger in Avon, Simsbury, Farmington, Berlin. We also hit some of the smaller towns like Andover, Columbia, Willington, Burlington. There's not one town in our service area that is not affected by hunger, and our mobile trucks are all over. We hit we do our mobile sites in 2-week cycles, so usually hit twice in a month.
Last time you were here, we talked about the growing number of food banks on college campuses. Is that something that continues to grow?
Absolutely, and you certainly see that here in the state of Connecticut. Just in our service area alone, we have Asnuntuck in Enfield. We have Manchester Community College, Capital Community College in Hartford, Goodwin College in East Hartford. They all have pantries. They've all been getting food from us for a number of years now. One of the things that we've been doing is working with the University of Connecticut. We've been working very hard with Nadine Brennan over at the Hartford campus, and Mark Overmeyer Velasquez on trying to open up a pantry on the Hartford campus. And we've also been having conversations with folks up at Stores on opening a pantry on campus at Stores. I think it's going to happen. It's just a matter of how quickly can we can the university turn things around. But it's a real need, and as somebody who teaches at the collegiate level, you see a lot of students coming in. They're buying books, they're paying for parking permits, they're paying for courses. They may not have enough food in order to eat. Interestingly, the state legislature is weighing in on this as well. Last year, both houses unanimously passed, and Governor Lamont signed a law that requires every public higher ed institution in Connecticut to report their food insecurity numbers in October of every year. And it was a great law, a great bill, and now a law proposed by Representative Haddad and Senator Haskell. And it's really putting more attention on that issue of college hunger. And quite frankly, I think we're probably a few years away, but within the near future, I think the state will probably legislate that public higher ed campuses have a plan to address hunger.
You're listening to Face Connecticut. We are talking to Food Share CEO Jason Jakubowski. Have we seen those numbers begin to trickle out yet?
They haven't yet. They'll come in after this October.
Now, hunger on college campuses, is that a need that has always been there, or do you see it increasing because of the rising cost of books and courses and things like that?
My guess is that the answer is probably a little bit of both. I mean, obviously, I was on a college campus at one point in time. I know what it's like to be in college. I think it a number of different factors definitely affect it. How rich are some of these meal plans that colleges are offering nowadays? What are some of the food options that are available to commuter students, to students who don't live on campus? I think those are factors. And then again, you do have the direct costs, the cost of tuition, the cost of books, the cost of parking on campus, the cost of gas to get to campus, bus transfers, all those types of things. They definitely add up. I think there's more attention paid to it now, but that doesn't necessarily mean it is a new problem.
Speaking of education, the Trump administration has proposed a new food stamp rule that could affect free lunch for a lot of kids. And how would that affect what you do?
Everything that goes on in Washington related to SNAP benefits, to free and reduced lunch, has a direct impact not just on food share but on every food bank in America. And the latest is just what I see as a continuing pattern of attacks on the SNAP system and on free and reduced lunch. what I think voters need to understand is that SNAP and free and reduced lunch are the first line of defense against hunger that we have here in America. For every meal that we're able to produce at FoodShare, SNAP is able to provide 12 meals, which means that if SNAP were to go away or get eroded, or somebody who qualifies for SNAP today is no longer qualified for SNAP despite no change in their own personal circumstances, they're going to rely on food banks for food. We, neither FoodShare nor any other food bank in the country, has enough food to be able to provide citizens with what they would be getting under SNAP. SNAP is absolutely the first line of defense. We're certainly here to help out in any way that we can, but we just don't have enough product to be able to cover whatever the loss would be.
So currently, the way it works is if you sign up for SNAP, or what they used to call food stamps, and you have kids, they are automatically signed up for free lunch?
Correct. Yep.
And that's what they want to do away with and make you go through more hoops and sign more papers?
Yeah,
like that?
And I could tell you what we see at FoodShare, just all you need to do is look at our activity and the activity of our partner programs during the summer. People always ask us, why is the summer so difficult? I mentioned before about how people aren't paying as much attention to hunger in the summertime. One of the other issues is that in many cases, children who are affected by poverty are getting one, sometimes two, sometimes three meals a day at school. Once the last day of school comes, like an iron curtain that comes down, they all of a sudden don't have access to those meals anymore. That's why there's that's why at your baseline you're starting with an inherently greater need during the during those summer months. We've tried a number of programs to be able to supplement that. You know, the State Department of Education works with End Hunger Connecticut on a summer meals program. We created 2 years ago Summer Food Share for Kids, in which we provide food to Camp Current and to some of the other camps around the area to be able to give kids on a Friday so they have food over the weekend and then return the bags on a Monday. Those are great and innovative programs. They still can't replace the loss that you have when you're reliant on a certain number of meals per day at school. I think we still, as a society, have a lot more to do. Have a longer way to go before we're able to solve that issue of summer hunger. So naturally, you can see if it's like that in the summer, you want to do everything you can in order to keep these children on their meal programs during the school year.
Just over a week ago, FoodShare was part of the annual Hunger for Change mm-hmm. conference. What were the takeaways from that event?
There were a number of specific takeaways from a public policy standpoint. Attorney General Tong gave an excellent keynote about our need to continue to stand up against some of these proposed changes coming out of Washington. But the more holistic thing I take out of that is that this is really something that we're all in together. This was a room filled of activists in New Haven from all over the state of Connecticut on a Thursday morning. They're coming together around one solid issue, around one unifying issue. Hunger affects everybody. It affects every community. It affects different demographics of individuals. And it was really a very energizing morning, an opportunity for us to really kind of, to really kind of feed off of each other and to see what, not just what state government is doing in relation to food insecurity, but what researchers are doing. We had a number of researchers from both FoodShare and from the Connecticut Food Bank, and we had a number of community activists, including the Witnesses to Hunger out of New Haven, who are just there to tell their story and to let people know this is a problem out there, even in the richest state in the union in the year 2019.
Has the thinking changed over the generations how you best tackle hunger?
I think it evolves. It's interesting. I mean, we've been, you know, society itself has been feeding the hungry going back to Old Testament days. I mean, this is something we're doing something that has been done for thousands and thousands of years.
Loaves and fishes.
Loaves and fishes. Absolutely. So, that part hasn't changed. People's innate desire to feed each other and to help each other in difficult times, I don't think that that has changed. I think that that drive and that passion is probably still the same as it was several thousands of years ago. What has changed is the amount of research that people have done, and I do think they look at it more – I do think we all tend to look at it more of as an issue of poverty and not necessarily food distribution. Even as recently as 30 years ago, if somebody was hungry, you know, you gave them a banana. Nowadays, if somebody's hungry, you give them a banana and you figure out, okay, why are they hungry and what can we do systemically in order to stop that so that they not continue, so that they're not continuously reliant on a food bank. We say all the time, sometimes we'll joke that, oh, we want to put ourselves out of business, things like that. And those are great goals to have. I think my pragmatic approach is that we understand that hunger will always be here, but how do we keep breaking that cycle and how do we get people out of that cycle of poverty so that they are not continuously reliant on our services? We want to always be there for the people who need us, but we also want to do what we can in order to help people be able to provide for themselves.
You talked about possible legislation in the future related to food banks on college campuses, mm-hmm. at public institutions. Do you see any other legislative remedies that could help?
Well, one of the things that that a number of states have done, and that we've that I know some legislators here in Connecticut have looked at, is a lunch shaming bill. New Mexico state legislature unanimously approved that law a few years ago. Things such as, you know, making sure that if a kid doesn't have their lunch money, you don't put a sticker on them that has an X, or you don't put them off to the side and say, okay, you have to sit over here today. You go ahead and you provide them with the meal, and then you figure out how to settle up at some point later. That's another thing that we're looking at. I think the biggest thing is how do we interact with government in order to, you know, produce better citizens and to produce a citizenry in which people are taking care of their needs across the board. And we do a lot of different things, ranging from helping people to sign up for SNAP benefits, which are very complicated to sign up for. We offer voter registration at our mobile sites. We often will have folks from Anthem or other providers there to sign people up for dual eligibility for Medicare, Medicaid. What types of services can we bring to those captive audiences that we have? And one of the things that I find talking to CEOs or to anybody at other nonprofits in the area, that typically my clients are their clients. And instead of us all operating in silos and us doing food and somebody else doing literacy and somebody else doing healthcare, how can we combine those types of things? I think government would like to push the model in that direction. And if you see, you know, a lot of the residuals of the Affordable Care Act and other such things like that are moving towards healthcare models in which we are looking at holistic change as opposed to just, oh, somebody's hungry here, let's give them a can of soup.
Circling back, when does Turkey in a 30 begin this year?
Turkey in a 30 officially kicks off November 7th, and it goes all the way until we'd like to get all the turkeys in by the Monday before Thanksgiving so that we can get them out by the Tuesday before Thanksgiving so they can thaw out. But people can go right now to our website, www.foodshare.org, and make a donation. People can donate actual frozen turkeys. People can donate virtual turkeys. There's a lot of people nowadays that don't like lugging frozen turkeys around. You can definitely go to our website and donate what is our cost of the turkey. And the weekend before Thanksgiving, we will be out at a number of different grocery stores in the area, outside again with bins collecting turkeys and also asking individuals for $30 contributions.
He is Jason Jakubowski, CEO of FoodShare. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Aaron. Good to be here.
Thanks for listening to Face Connecticut. I'm Aaron Kupek. Enjoy the balance of your weekend.
Face Connecticut is a production of the News and Public Affairs Department of WTIC Radio.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.